And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's enjoying your rainy, cloudy, and gray day. Looks like a lot more rain today, and probably tomorrow.
Yeah, it's what I've been told.
Yeah.
It's what I've been told by one of my weather sources.
Mm-hmm. You have weather sources?
I really do.
Me too. I have four in town that I use.
Yeah. No, I have a source that I text about the weather.
Yeah.
Inside source.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Inside.
Yeah.
Do they divulge this info to anybody else but just you?
Well, I get it ahead of time.
You get it ahead of time.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can prepare.
What are they saying?
It's going to rain.
Oh, okay. You got pretty good sources.
Good info. Strong info.
My source says the same thing. So
there you go.
I think we're both on the same page.
How about that?
Mm-hmm. Elijah Campbell, behind the glass, Darren McFarland. That's me, Chase McCurb.
Sup?
Tim. Well, Adonic is in Calgary. Flames and Preds tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. Puck drop, 7 o'clock pregame. Everything right here on 102.5 The Game after a nice 2-1 victory in OT last night in Winnipeg. So they've gone to Winnipeg twice now in the last 2.5 weeks and come away with 4 points. Not bad.
Yeah, and look, I'm excited to talk about this game today because I watched it and I sat there. Even when they went down 1-0, they came back pretty quickly to tie it up. They played a complete game. They played a complete game. It wasn't perfect. It's not going to be perfect. I don't think any team. You know, I used to joke with Brent Peterson, who will actually be my guest tonight on Smashville Live. I used to joke with him all the time about, you know, coach would love a perfect 60 minutes. Those don't exist, but you have to like the resolve of the Preds, and Nick Bonino continues to have a tremendous year. Rocco Grimaldi sets him up, gets the game-tying goal, and then how about Mikael Granlund, what he's been able to do since John Hines took over. I think I saw Adam Vingan put the stat out there that he had 7 goals in 51 regular season games under Peter Laviolette. He's had 5 goals in 11 games under John Hines.
In the last 7.
Yeah, I don't know what has exactly changed with him, but you definitely see a difference, and I think you're seeing a difference with the rest of the team. It's just, can they consistently put it together? It's got to be consistent now, and they just got to keep this going. But a good win last night. You would love to win it in regulation, but you got the 2 points, and that's all that matters.
The 3 playoff teams currently right now ahead of you on this road trip.
Yeah.
So.
And they're right there.
Nowhere out of the woods.
They're right there. They are knocking on the door.
It's a good game. It's 2 points. That's the goal. And they accomplished that. Now we'll see if they can keep that going tomorrow night in Calgary, because these games are huge. By the way, Calgary is even bigger. I mean, I don't know if it's any bigger than really Winnipeg. Winnipeg and Nashville now have the same amount of points, and they're all, those two are battling for that. You know, those wild card spots, at least right now. But Calgary is one of those teams. And right now they're on the inside. But they could easily be on the outside looking in. So we'll see. It was a good game.
I
don't know why. To answer your question, I don't know why it's happened either, but you see that all the time. Not just in hockey. You see that in sports. Sometimes just players respond differently to certain coaches. What has changed? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe right now. But that's only been, the last 4 games he's been on the first line?
And I think it was going to take some time for the entire team. You know, you don't – so many people and I'm not necessarily blaming anybody for this, but I think some of us had that thought of, oh, well, St. Louis did it last year, so now the Preds are going to do the same thing. John Hines is going to come in here and win the Stanley Cup. Probably not. That's not exactly how it works always. It happens sometimes. But I think that – now that he's had a month to get his systems in place, you are starting to see some of the players that needed to respond. There are still others that need to get their stuff together. There are still some players that aren't quite there to where they need to be. Now, can they get there? You know, David Poile told us yesterday. I mean, he's still in wait-and-see mode. This road trip is very, very important for them. And if they, you know, take care of business, then I think that changes the view of the Predators and how they're going to handle things come the trade deadline. But it's one game. You feel good today. Enjoy it. But then you got to turn around and do it again. I will say this, though. kudos to the penalty kill. They had some big kills last night, and they got it done.
Against a very good Winnipeg team.
Yes.
It's a man advantage.
Yes.
A dangerous team.
And the Preds only had two power play chances, but you had the penalty kill. I mean, Victor Arvidsson took a couple of penalties to Norty, and that was a penalty shot.
By the way, thank you, Line A, for a crappy penalty shot.
Yeah.
That was a pathetic attempt.
Well, and I think the Preds now have stopped 4 or 5 on the year. Is that right?
Yeah, it sounds right.
So, and then Turris, you know, gets one late in the game. But, again, full 60 minutes. They got it done. And 60-plus minutes.
61 minutes. And
they controlled overtime, too. They controlled overtime from the jump.
Yeah, well, they did. I mean, Winnipeg didn't record a shot.
Yeah, so but I liked the looks that they got. And then, you know, the game winner by Granlund, I thought it was a great setup. So, keep it going. Big play by Duchesne.
I would be perfectly fine if, now that, you know, things have quieted down some. It's fair to say, right? Things have quieted down a little bit.
Yep.
Doesn't mean everything has come to a screeching halt. No, it's not. It's not July. But if we could get, like, yesterday, like, all the time, like, that'd be great.
All the news?
Honestly, that'd be great.
I mean, it'd continue into
the
night.
Eventually, we'd run out. We'll run out at some point, but I'm open to just big things happening constantly. Because we thought yesterday when we were done, it was like, whew, that's crazy.
Are you
that's
like
crazy
me
4 hours.
When you have a show like that where it's just bam, 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 and you get done and you sit down and you're tired, like you need a second just to kind of catch your breath? Are you? Because you've been doing this obviously a little bit more.
It's a mentally deal.
Yeah, and that's
really
what,
like,
I mean.
Tire, like,
it's not physically. It's just like your brain just needs a break. That's how I felt
it's
after the show yesterday.
A little overload, and then it just kept going.
Yeah, with baseball.
And, you know, this has been out there. It's not like this is a secret. Like, whoa, what just happened? There's been speculation of this, but it actually happened, and there were a lot of baseball trades last night, and one big one that affected our market. Mookie Betts, David Price to L.A., now with the Dodgers.
The Dodgers just went from being really good to even better. And then they turned around and made some other trades to make room. But now the question is going to be, because David Price is under contract for a while, will they be able to reach a long-term deal with Mookie Betts? I know that's going to be the goal. That's a pretty solid lineup and pitching rotation they got over there. I mean, they have to be the favorite in the National League now.
I mean, how could they not?
I think they already probably
were without those guys. I mean, they're clearly the favorite. They have to be the favorite in baseball.
Yeah. Do you think now? So would you go Dodgers, Yankees? Your top two?
I don't know. I don't know if two is clear cut. I think two is subjective. It's depending on who you ask.
Yeah.
I think clearly the Red Sox are out of the picture.
Yep.
I mean, they're not done. I mean, they're not going to lose 100 games, but they're not a powerhouse. Yankees are obviously really good.
I'd say the Dodgers
and
Yankees are
up
there.
How do the Astros respond?
Yeah.
I don't know. The Angels were active again, but they've been active all the time, and it doesn't really seem to translate. I'm not willing to jump on the Angels.
The Twins got better. The Braves are up there.
Twins got better, but they're, you know, it's still the Twins. I mean, I'm not ready to say the Twins, watch out. I mean,
they should win that division.
Yes, they should. Of course.
Well, that's not a very good division.
No. They should win it by default.
You know, the NL Central, I mean honestly, I'd put the Reds probably right now as the best team in that division. You can't rule out the Cardinals, but
That one's going to be wide open. That one's going to be kind of fun to see.
The East will be wide open because the Braves are really good, but I think the Phillies are going to be better. I think the Mets will be better.
The Phillies will definitely be better, for sure, I think.
So
Braves, I think they're going to be really good.
They should be the pick to win it. But
the Padres, everybody's been saying the Padres. Padres.
I got to see it.
I know.
I got to see it.
I got to see it, too.
Got to see it. D-backs, meh.
No.
But, yeah. Look, it's going to be exciting. And the thing that I'm curious, we'll talk to Carl Ravitch coming up in a little bit. I want to ask him, is Arenado the next one? Is that the next domino to fall now that Betts has been traded? will the Rockies pull the trigger and ship Arenado off somewhere? Because I kind of wonder if they, now that Betts has been moved, do they want to just go ahead and try and get that done? Even though they have said he's going to start the season with them, I don't believe that. I think if the right offer's there, then they'll make the move.
Our team's going to keep doling out. Is it just going to get higher and higher? I mean, are they really going to go to $400 million? I mean, is that what people are going to do?
It's
like there's only so many teams.
It's the cost of winning.
But I mean, is Arenado, is that why they moved Mookie? Is it because the long-term deal? I mean, they couldn't come up with maybe, you know, there was a huge gap.
However, the Nats proved everybody wrong last year. They didn't pay to keep Bryce Harper, and they won the World Series. So,
and then they didn't keep Rendon.
And then they didn't keep Rendon. So, look, who knows? But I don't know.
I'm saying that because Arenado and Betts are going to be the next standard, right? They're going to be what Machado and Harper got.
Well, Arenado already has the contract, though, right?
What did Colorado end up giving him?
Let me look it
up. He wasn't one of those. I mean, he didn't get to $300 million.
No, but he's got I know he's got a few years left on the deal. 8-year contract worth $255 million, and that was last year.
Last year?
Yeah.
Okay.
About a year, almost a year ago. So he signed 8 years, $255 million. So, I mean, that's his contract. He's locked in.
But I was there last year. He's their only tickets guy, so I don't know how they sell him. I don't know how they trade him. What do you have?
Well, yeah, but I mean,
he's the reason people show up.
I think you have to decide that you're going into rebuild, which they pretty much already are.
I was going to say, they're just a solid team. They're not they're just an okay team.
But it's look, we've both been there. It's a nice park. It's great location.
It's a great market. They sell.
Yeah.
I mean, they go to games.
Yeah.
I went to two games last year. They were sold out. Now, granted, it was the Dodgers and the Astros.
Yeah.
Two attractive games.
We saw Dodgers Cubs.
But they were sold out games.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just wonder if they move him.
We will come back and head over to West End. We'll talk to Tim Corbin, speaking of baseball, their fine baseball coach. We speak to him on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, when you hear that music, you know what that means. Time to talk baseball.
John Fogerty?
Well, it could mean that, but you associate that baseball. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe alongside Willie D is in Calgary. Preds and Flames tomorrow night. We head over to West End. Their awesome baseball coach, Tim Corbin, is on the line. Tim, how you doing?
Good, D. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. Wasn't quiet yesterday, I can say that. I guess let's just start with what took place after our show, even though these rumors have been out there for a while. But what did you make of your Red Sox shipping out two Nashvillians to L.A. and now with the Dodgers?
Well, I just felt like that was going to happen because you heard so much talk about it. And, you know, it's great for Mookie and David because they're so close and obviously two Nashvillians. And now they'll be going to a place where we have another Vanderbilt guy and Walker Buehler. So I think it creates a nice dynamic for the Dodgers in terms of that clubhouse. You're getting two quality people that are very good players too. I'm looking forward to watching David in the National League. Now, he's been in the American League for some time, and not because he can hit, because he'll tell you he can, but he can't. He told me last night he's got a two-game hitting streak, and I said, congratulations, Lou Gehrig. But he'll have a good time in that league, I think, pitching-wise. And Mookie, you don't have to say too much about him. He's a very good player.
Yeah, and now they're the favorite in baseball, so it's going to be up to them to finish things off. In fact, if we could add, you brought up Walker Buehler, so you've got David Price and Walker Buehler as the connection to you and Vanderbilt in this market. You brought up Mookie Betts, of course, Nashville, and there's one more. Matt Beatty is currently on that team.
Well, that's true, yeah.
So we got four connections.
That's true. Matt was one of Dave's best hitters over there at Belmont and certainly did a lot of damage against us. So you're right. That's it's nice to see that. It just keeps dignifying the fact that Tennessee is a very good baseball state, and more you look at it, more and more you look at the rosters in our conference, and then the four guys you just mentioned, it kind of speaks to it.
Yeah, but you figured that out a long time ago, so good on you. You knew that. Yeah. You knew that well before us, that this was a pretty good place to find talent. Yeah. You had your baseball banquet. You do every year at the beautiful downtown Omni on Saturday night, this past weekend.
Right.
New AD Malcolm Turner a year ago was there. He was not there yesterday or on Saturday. Obviously, you had to have known. So, I mean, when did you know all this was going down with your athletics director?
Not really until, I guess, Sunday and Monday when you heard more specific conversations about what would happen and potentially would happen. And, you know, you never know the background to anything. And not that I need to know that. You know, I need to stay in our lane. But same time, you know, it's just tough to hear that right away. We'll manage and we'll transition. Certainly Candace is qualified and a really, really good person. I've always enjoyed Candace, been with her for 18 years. So she's got a lot to her. And it will be good to have her in that position, and she'll create some harmony, and is a hard worker. But at the same time, you know, I enjoyed Malcolm too. I mean, Malcolm and Jess were, you know, we went to dinner with them several times and enjoyed it. He was good to our baseball program. So, you know, it's always tough to see that, but, you know, life moves on.
It does. And, you know, you're in just a short amount of time, and I know she's, of course, we all remember her playing days, and she's been around, but now that she's been kind of pushed to the forefront, now it gets asked, what do you know? And the people that we had Jordan Rogers on yesterday, everybody we've talked to, they say the same thing about her. So you know her better than us. The people we've talked to know her better than us. Why does it seem like everybody's got the same message of just how impressed they are with her and just, I guess, the way she carries herself and what she's like?
Well, it speaks to human consistency. I think if a lot of people talk about a person in a similar fashion, it's because they have a consistent way about her, and that's Candace. I mean, to a T, she's made from the right fibers. You know, that's when, you know, the university has statements and you talk about it's a trailblazing situation and so on, which is true, but, you know, it's beyond that. Let's just look at Candace for who she is. She's a human. She's a qualified human. She cares about other people. She operates with consistency, discipline, and empathy and intelligence. And, you know, when you're around people like that, it's significant, because even in quality organizations, you don't always have that. But, you know, we've been together for 18 years, and we're very close. And she's had to work through transitions herself. And, you know, I know she has an interim position right now, and that's fine. And that gives her an opportunity to grow. It gives the university an opportunity to evaluate. You know, there was a football coach in this country that was an interim position for a while too, and everyone felt like he wasn't qualified enough to do what he was doing. Next thing you know, his team wins a national championship. So I think the thing about people is sometimes, like people in baseball programs, you put them in positions where they have an opportunity to grow, and you empower them, and you never know what can happen. So good for Candace. And, you know, through the transition of Malcolm, she gets an opportunity, and she'll move forward and do things with trust.
You've done a whole lot of good over on that campus, as we all know. And everybody says the same. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about Candace or you, everybody has the same story to tell, and that's really about what you guys are about. But I want to know, there's a stigma right now, Tim, with, you know, just people that it's that there's people in charge that don't care about athletics, and they're not willing to spend money, and they're not willing to do the things. And you guys have been able to kind of do your own thing, and I know why, because you've rolled up your sleeves and made that happen. But also has to be concerning. That's the school that you love. It's where you coach, and you don't want that out there. And there's a lot of people right now that think it's a mess because it doesn't seem like they care. How does that make you feel when you hear that?
It, I think when you hear things on the outside and they get to you or you listen to them, you know, I guess it matters. It does matter. Public opinion matters. It does to a certain degree. But time has a way of healing a lot of things that happen. And the reality is, and the most important thing is, I feel, you know, I'm very confident in how we operate within the university, and things do happen in the university over time, but the more you put your head down and you operate in your lane and you don't leave your lane and you do it with care and consistency yourself, then in time, those wounds will start to heal a little bit. And that's what it is. It's a wound, you know, for the university, and they have to own up to it, and they have to speak to it. And, you know, we just operate inside of it, and we've been given a great opportunity, and we'll do our best to represent the university. I'm very confident in that. And that's why, you know, for us, I'm glad the season is starting next Friday, because we can immerse ourselves in that business, which we should, and that's the only business we need to worry about. And, you know, I'm just like a parent that is just trying to take care of our family to the best of my ability and make sure that these kids that are inside of it have a great experience, and they will.
Well, well said, and I know we brought you on to talk about your team, so thank you for kind of enduring all that other stuff, but
no problem.
I definitely wanted to talk to you about it. But so how excited are you? You've got no stranger to big expectations. You've got a big bullseye on you guys again. How excited are you about this team?
I'm excited, like I always am. I'm just excited to watch some infants learn to walk. I think, you know, when you have inexperience within your group, it's always exciting to watch kids stand up for the first time and take 2, 3, 4 steps in different environments, and that's where we are. I'm not underselling some of the older kids that we have in the program, but the majority of the kids that we have in the program are inexperienced. So they're going to be learning on the run. I'm sure that some will look at them and say they're supposed to do this and that, but again, they're young. And our emphasis is just trying to get them at a point, D, where by the end of April and May, that you're moving in the trajectory that you want your team to be moving in. And as good as that team was last year in 19, and these are things I've thought about, I guess, when I'm by myself, is right now at this point, I was very unsure about who was going to play shortstop, who was going to play second base, who was going to play third base. We didn't have any answers. I went back in my notes of last year at this time and was reading after training notes that I jotted down, and I had so many question marks in my own mind about what we were going to do. And then we didn't know what we were going to do with our pitching because, you know, we didn't know Fellows could be Fellows. We didn't know Kumar could be Kumar, especially after that first weekend. And we didn't know if Hickman was, I hate to say it, but real or not. You know, you don't know whether kids are really who they are until they're thrust in positions of strength. And so I think this team, it's not the same as last year's group because it's not as old, but at the same time, it's going to be exciting to watch that growth too. And our schedule is ambitious, to say the least. So we're certainly going to be fighting very good competitors.
Yeah, I think you're familiar with your first opponent that you'll take on next Friday, Michigan, to start the season when you guys go to Arizona. I know that's going to be fun to kind of have that rematch.
It will. Yeah, we've seen a lot of them, Chase. I mean, God knows, World Series, and then we were bright enough to schedule them again for the David Williams Classic. So, and this will be the fifth time in a very short time. So that, yeah, it'll be good. We're facing a very good pitcher who we faced last year right away. Yeah, Eric and his group is certainly talented and very, very confident too. But hopefully we'll be able – we the last time we played him in the fall, we didn't have a lot of pieces playing for us at that point. We're still missing a couple older kids, but same time Austin Martin will be playing, and we'll have some pieces there that we didn't. So be good just to get out there and play in Arizona. That was a fun tournament last year, and I know I'm really excited for the kids to have that opportunity.
Tim Corbin, Vanderbilt baseball coach, is here with us on Darren, Donick, and Chase. And I'm curious on this, Tim. You've now won two national titles as a coach. Have you handled going into this season any differently than you did the last time? Maybe you've learned something of, you know, how to prepare the kids that are coming back for the expectations or you know, repeating or things like that. Do you go about it any differently?
Differently than 14 or going into 15? Yeah, probably, because I did learn something. And if I didn't, shame on me. I think the thing, and this is just selfishly and personally, is learning how to say no, because oftentimes, well, it is the case when you win a national championship and team plays like that, the leader oftentimes gets thrown into situations that people would think he's an authoritarian. So let's ask him to do this. Let's ask him to do this. When really, me as a person, I'm usually the dumbest guy in the room. So being a head coach of a baseball program and getting the opportunity to speak here, speak there, do this, do that, I think what I learned in 14 was to say no. You know, you got to concentrate on your team. You got to concentrate on recruiting. And I think just getting to the base level of life again and centering yourself to where you say, okay, we won a national championship. You surely want to celebrate it, but even the celebratory phase is very, very short. We went to dinner with our group that night, and then the next day it was, you know, we were operating here at the field watching a tournament. So I can't really say that outside of the small celebrations you have, you're not really celebrating that long, but really getting back to the middle of your team and focusing on them, I think has been pretty natural for us. And I'm very straightforward with the kids when it comes to that. I said, guys, you know, there'll be times where people will want to celebrate the 19 team, and that's great. And we want to take advantage of it. But when it gets right down to it, we're writing our own little chapter again. It's just a big Vanderbilt baseball book, but this 20 chapter will be ours and only ours. And we can't repeat anything because no one on the team has ever been in this situation before. Which is true, because even the kids that are returning, they're 12 months older, so they're not the same. So it's just really speaking to what it is and being real about it with the kids so that they understand, yeah, you're right, let's go do this and let's be us, and that's what we're trying to do.
You brought up Kumar earlier and just the journey he went on last year as a freshman, and I know you have other young players that you're wanting to see advance, but what is it that you're looking for the most out of him as he goes into his sophomore year?
Oh, and more academic growth, continuing to learn the leadership piece for him. He's a very low maintenance kid. We've had conversations about approach to this year. Approach to this year personally and some of the things that come to an individual when you're that type of presence, when you're spoken about in certain regards. I mean, he handles things very well. He's the best reflection of his mom and dad. He really is. This is a quality kid in so many different ways. There's a lot to him, but he doesn't put anything on his body. He doesn't try to dress in a certain way. He just competes and prepares like a professional. And for that, and he'll have to, because obviously when you're that type of person, you're operating with a bullseye that is a little bit broader and bigger than most. So he just has been thrust into the preparation mode, and he handles it well, and that's all he's about. The only time he's taken from preparation are when people reach out to him, whether it's the SEC, whether it's the school, and they want to do sound bites or conversations with him. But he does them, and he does them well, but what he's thrust into is this team and how he prepares, and I love that about him.
The boys I've got are just 8, but I'm trying to get the winning mentality into them, so I think I'm going to bring them to one of your games so they understand what winning looks like. That's my goal.
That's a compliment, D.
What? It's It's the truth.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. It's the big time Thank truth, you. And I'm not even
I can't
kidding.
Believe 8 years old. I'm having a hard time comprehending that.
I know.
Gosh.
I know.
Tim, I wish you could see him when he comes in after a loss. I mean, it's a sight to see. He takes it with him.
I do not handle
Coach
it well.
Darren takes it with him.
I do not handle
We're
losses very well.
Parent conversation, D. Come on now.
Tim, always a pleasure, and we look forward to you as always talking to you throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you both. I appreciate it.
All right, that is Tim Corbin, Vanderbilt's baseball coach, and I'm not kidding. I'm going to try to get him over to a game.
You should.
I do. I you know I like to study people and people that are in charge. And look, and we'll get into this on the other side. There's back to the beginning part about Vanderbilt. There's a reason why it hasn't affected Tim Corbin. Yeah. We'll talk about it on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Special thanks to Tim Corbin, as always. Chris Lee coming up at 11 o'clock. We'll get a chance to talk to him with VandySports.com. He was one breaking a lot of news yesterday, and he has certainly done the circuit. I hope he still has a voice. As many interviews as Chris Lee has done. We'll talk to Carl Ravish at 11:30, our weekly chat with Tim Hasselbeck in the third hour, and our weekly chat with Chris Mason in the fourth and final hour. So a lot of things on our plate, and getting back to what we were talking about, the reason that some of this stuff, and it's hard to have some of the Vanderbilt conversations with Tim Corbin, is because it really doesn't apply to him, and it's a credit to him, and the reason it doesn't apply to him is because he's done his own thing. Yeah. The reason he's saying stay in our lane and no, we are, because he just stayed in his lane. He went and just said, well, fine, and then I'll just go do what we need to do. And the reason that happens is, and he doesn't like to, you know, talk about this. He doesn't want, and I'm not going to sit there and keep bringing it up to him because he gets uncomfortable. It's because of him. It's because of the person that he is. There's a reason these players are all in on Vanderbilt when they leave. When they've gone on to have their professional career
back,
and they're making millions of dollars, or they're having tons of success, or even if they're not, there's a reason that they're all rooting for Vanderbilt, and they keep coming around, and they keep coming back, and they donate money. It's because of him.
Yeah, and I mean, look at
that. That's just the bottom line, and it's a really simplistic answer, but it's just the truth. That's the reason it happens. It's because of the makeup of Tim Corbin.
Yeah, and he's got former players on his staff. I mean, Mike Baxter is the hitting coach, had a 12-year career. Granted, I mean, he was mainly in the minors, but had a 12-year professional career, came back, and now he's the hitting coach. And look at the lineup that they had last year. I mean, that's commitment right there to Tim Corbin. It's yes, it's to Vanderbilt to an extent, but it's to Tim Corbin. And he comes on these shows, and he's very honest. And I can remember going back to the days of when I was producing, some of the honest conversations he had with you guys about the draft and different things going on at Vanderbilt, and I've always liked that about him. And so, yeah, it's a credit. Two national championships now. Vanderbilt.
Three trips to the national championship.
And three trips. Vanderbilt's not supposed to do that. They're not supposed to win national championships in sports. He's got two.
They're the powerhouse in baseball.
Yeah.
Look, and by the way, how interesting was it him talking about this time a year ago?
Yeah.
Him writing down the question marks that he had about his team.
Yep.
And
I thought
went
that
on
was
to win the national championship.
And, you know, he's such a thoughtful guy. Like, you heard him. He has notes. He still has his notes from last year. And he's so methodical in how he does things. That's why I asked him the question of, did you handle this year differently than you did in 15 after winning the national championship? Because you had never done it before then. So it was new. So you didn't really know what to expect. Now you do. And he gave me the answer that I thought he would, that, yeah, he has gone about it differently because he has learned something. You learn, you know, you always hear the phrase that you learn more from losing than you do from winning. Well, I think you do learn some things from winning. You learn how to handle winning. You got to know how to handle it. You can't just expect it to happen. You know, I think one thing that a lot of us went through, a lot of fans went through when the Predators went to the Stanley Cup final, when the Titans went to the Super Bowl, everybody was like, oh, we're going to do it again. We're going to do it again the next year. It's just magically going to happen. Doesn't work that way. So I think from Tim's point of view and how he handles the players, you do have to learn that, no, you got to start all over. It doesn't matter where you finished the year before. Everybody, it's an equal playing field. You start at the bottom just like everybody else, and you got to work your way back up.
Look, I know you have to have the players, okay? Let's just all admit that and understand that's how it works, because I always hate the argument. Mel Jackson, yeah, but he had Jordan and Pippen. Yeah, but he had Kobe and Shaq. Well, duh. I mean, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Bill Walsh, we praise him. What players do you think he had? I mean, Chuck Knoll. I mean, we go down to the greats that did a lot of winning. Well, yeah, of course they had the players. So I get it. You have to have the players. Greg Popovich has always been reared as this great coach, right?
He had the players.
Yeah, how's he doing without the players?
Yeah, not
how
well.
How the Spurs? Are they their powerhouse?
He had the original big three.
Yeah. How's Steve Kerr? He all of a sudden forget how to coach? No. I mean, I get it. You have to have the horses.
I don't know if he really ever had to coach with the group that he had.
He may have been able to roll out the ball. I don't think so, though. There is something to that.
Sure.
Like you have to, like you said, you have to manage. You think the most talented team always wins? No.
No.
That's not how it works. But there is a buy-in factor, and clearly there is a buy-in factor with Tim Corbin. I was watching the, Inside the NFL on Showtime last night.
Yes.
I guess there was their season wrap-up show, and they had a lot of, obviously, mic'd up with the Super Bowl. It was great.
I love that stuff.
A lot of audio of the Super Bowl mic'd up. Yes, they have players. Yes, they have Mahomes. Yes, they have Kelce and Tyreek Hill. We all know the players that the Chiefs have. I get it, especially the quarterback. But there is it's very clear, very clear. There was a 100% buy-in on the head coach.
Yep.
Andy Reid, they were all about it for Andy Reid. Just watch the video. Listen to what they say. Watch how they act. Listen to how he talks to them. And look, Tim Corbin brought up in the interview, it's very clear that there was a buy-in down in Baton Rouge. Do they have players? Sure they have players. But they bought into the head coach. They were all in on the head coach.
I think to an extent with the Titans, you saw that when he made the tough decision, when Vrabel made the tough decision to go to Tannehill and bench Mariota, that proved to his locker room that he's in it to win it, and he's willing to do whatever it takes. And because so much was made about trying to make Mariota successful, and they did, they tried. But he made that decision, and you saw a different team. And you know, you saw a team that came together, and I think there was a buy-in to him and his coaching ability. So I agree with that. I mean, Andy Reid, if you can't go play for him, then I don't know. I mean, I've met Andy Reid, and you know, people always ask me who are some of the coolest people that you've gotten to meet doing this. He's definitely up towards the top, the nicest guy. We were at the combine, and what was funny is Bill O'Brien and Andy Reid showed up at the same time. And I didn't know what to do. Bill O'Brien sits down, starts doing the interview with Jared and Floyd. I'm standing there sweating, like, Andy Reid's here, making him wait. You know, I feel bad. And he just, like, puts his hand on my shoulder and goes, it's cool. I'll wait. It's fine. I'm like, it's Andy Reid. So there's definitely a buy-in from that team. And, look, he deserves it. He's done it the right way. So guys like that should be rewarded.
By the way, there's going to be a Titans offseason preview show tomorrow from 5 until 7 p.m. right here on 102.5 The Game. Jared Floyd Reese, Forever Titan Chris Sanders. They're going to look towards the upcoming NFL offseason and the 2020 Titans after a big playoff run. Remember, that's tomorrow from 5 until 7 p.m. We will come back and wrap up the first hour. It is National Signing Day. It doesn't feel like
I know
signing days in the past. It's because
it's pretty much done.
There's two layers, and this is supposed to be the big one, and unfortunately, the big one, part two is not the big one anymore. The early signing period is the big one.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's necessarily supposed to be the big one anymore. I think they knew when they changed it that it was going to get swept under the rug because of the early signing period.
Do you think so? Do you think they really knew?
I would think so.
You're giving them an awful lot of credit.
That's true. It is the NCAA. It's a good point.
They may have figured it out by now.
Somebody told them.
I'm not sure they figured out.
Somebody self-reported that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure Charles Robinson told him from Yahoo Sports. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Kansas City's going to have their big parade today. I'd love to have a parade in Nashville. That would be fun.
I think one day we will.
Well, I hope so. One day could be a long time. Like, how long's one day?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the football team went to the AFC title game.
Like 21-78? I mean,
who knows?
One day? I mean, that's...
The Preds... You know, they've been there in the last few years. I mean, who knows? I don't know. I don't think any sports market can really predict when that day is going to come.
Well, they waited 50 years.
Yeah. But I love that. Like, I love now that you have a new team. You have something different. I know they had won one before, but it was 50 years ago.
Will it happen in the 50-year window of Nashville professional sports? So you have to. Mm. It's already been 20.
So are you saying 50 years from now or 30 more years?
In the 50-year window.
Okay.
So that would be 30 more years. In the next 30 years.
I'm going to say yes. I will say yes. I think it will.
I think you're talking yourself into it. I don't think you know if you really...
Because I don't know. I mean, I don't know the answer.
I don't know if you love that answer or not.
But it's hard to... Number one, you have... Well, I guess now you have three shots at it with Nashville SC.
Well, yeah.
Hopefully.
After yesterday, yeah.
So you have that. You have the Stanley Cup. You have the Lombardi Trophy. And, you know, no slight to MLS, but obviously the Stanley Cup or the Lombardi Trophy would be really, really cool. You know, MLS is still very new. So... But you don't know. There's so much parity in these leagues now. I'm going to say yes, and I'll stick by that within 30 years, one of these teams will win a championship. But I can't sit here and be, you know, definitive and say, yes, absolutely. Because, I mean, you don't know. Did you think – you've been saying since the Chiefs won the AFC championship, they're going to win the Super Bowl. And I think a lot of people – after last year's team and then this year, you know, once Mahomes got healthy, it's like, okay, they got a good shot at it. But you didn't know. San Francisco was good. They're a good team. That game goes a little bit differently. They win the Super Bowl. You just never know. New England. If Brady had anybody to throw to, they're probably back in it. So it's just really, really hard to predict. I mean, did you honestly think the Titans would be in the AFC Championship game?
Well, we all know the answer to that.
Right. But that's my point, that there's always a team that comes out of nowhere.
But wouldn't you have to say, I guess the reason I'm kind of pressing you is I think you should feel okay with your answer. You shouldn't be like hesitant. Think about it. Are the two teams close?
Yes.
Are they close or are they far away?
They're close.
Okay. That's all you can ask for.
And I know it's hard to look at the Predators that way right now because it's recency bias, but they're close.
Are they in a window of winning?
Yes.
Have they been winning?
Yeah.
Are the Titans winning?
Yes.
Okay. Like, that's all you can ask for. It's not like we're talking about.
Nashville SC's new, so you don't exactly know what that's going to look like yet.
It's not like we're the Knicks.
Right.
Like, the Knicks have no hope.
And they won't for a while.
One, as long as Dolan's their owner, they never will have hope.
Yeah.
Do you know they haven't been to the playoffs? Or they haven't, I'm sorry, not the play. What? I think the last time they had a winning season was like 7 years ago. Is that right?
It was 2013, yeah, because I was a senior in high school, and that was the Carmelo and J.R. Smith-led team.
A winning season.
Wow.
The New York Knicks.
And it's not like
number
making the playoffs
market,
in the East.
Number one market, Madison Square Garden.
And they have they're in the worst, one of the worst conferences in all pro sports.
7 years since they've had a winning season. So, you know, it's not like we got the Tigers and the Knicks.
But you just hit on something that that we have talked about some.
So if you think they're good, which we all agree that they have two good teams.
Right.
Are they great? No, they're not a great. Are they good? Yeah. Are they capable, especially with some tweaking and moves? Yeah. So why wouldn't you feel good that it could happen? It's not like you're sitting around. We're sitting around here talking about franchises that have no chance, like zero chance.
But what's been the biggest change for both of those franchises in the last, let's say, 15 years that have gotten them to this point? It's been the ownership. The Predators got a stable ownership group that has been willing to spend money, and they've done it. And they've gotten they've kept the players that they've drafted, and they've acquired the players that they needed to. And now Amy Adams Strunk has...
Well, let's also say this. The reason that they've spent money is because the fans in this market has grown, and
You had to spend money to make money.
They also had to come to the games.
They did.
And they've been coming to the games.
They did.
And that was not the case early on. It was a real struggle, especially the first 3 months of the season. It was really a struggle. We don't talk about that stuff anymore. So you're right. And the ownership is – look, since –
But the commitment of ownership really changed things. Now, that was the commitment of the fans. The fans said, no, we don't want to lose the team.
Mm-hmm.
They stepped up and did their part. And the ownership group, what were they?
Local.
But they were fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were fans. And they got together and they saved the team. But the ownership has been committed. Well, now with the Titans, have they done everything right? No. I mean, I don't think either team, you know, is going to do everything right. But the Titans now have a stable ownership group led by Amy Adams Strunk, and she has slowly but surely, and she's had to learn on the job. When she first took over, I can remember the conversations that we had. She didn't know what the hell she was doing, but she had to learn, and she has, and she's learned from her mistakes. And now you're seeing the team have some stability because they're stable up top. That's the big difference, and you brought it up with the Knicks. They have a terrible owner. That if you have a bad owner, the Browns don't have a good owner. If you have bad ownership, you're not going to have a good team.
No, you're not. You don't have a chance. And I mean, that's life. That's any profession.
Yeah, you can fire.
If you have bad bosses, you have bad ownership in any job, you're not going to succeed. You're just not.
You can fire coaches, GMs, trade players, doesn't matter. If your ownership is not good, not strong, it's a trickle-down effect. It's going to affect everyone.
So the answer then is you should feel a little bit more confident. Like, yeah, next 30 years that could happen for sure.
I think it will. I mean, look, I think it could happen in the next 10 years.
They're both closer than far away.
Yes. Yes.
So that's all you can ask for.
And we've seen a trend. I mean, Kansas City was in the AFC title game last year. They lost, turned around the next year, win the Super Bowl. Could very well happen to the Titans with a couple of tweaks here and there. You get Derrick Henry re-signed. You get Tannehill re-signed. You figure out the offensive line. Is it going to be Conklin? Or are you going to get somebody else at right tackle? A couple pieces here and there, you're right back at it. But you got to start all over again. It's like we were talking about with Vanderbilt. You don't just start at the top or where you finished. You start at the bottom with everybody else and work your way back up.
We'll come back, kick things off with Chris Lee. The big news yesterday, he was right in the middle of it. We'll do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.